Welcome to another episode of By His Grace Podcast. Today, I'm excited to introduce my guest to you, Chantel Brewer. Hey, Chantel, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Chantel, can you tell my listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I currently teach fifth grade for about six more minutes. I'm in the middle of switching jobs. I am an advocate for anti-trafficking, and so that's been a really big part of my education, my teaching style, just on the prevention end of it. I'm married. I have five kids. I live in Nevada, and that anti-trafficking is just something that has come up in probably the last about five years. I've worked with them for the last 2 years, and they finally just were able to offer me a full-time position. And so I'm going to be leaving education technically. And instead of being a teacher, a typical teacher, right now I'm a fifth grade in middle school. I lead middle school choir. But instead of doing that daily, I actually get to go around and train teachers. I have a curriculum I've written that I'm hoping to get into the schools to help them with all of prevention and, you know, just that important social emotional piece that's missing for a lot of our kids. And that awareness that teachers want to help, parents want to help, they just don't have a clue what to do or what they're looking for. So that's me in a nutshell. I write on the side of all of that. I have a book that came out that took me about 1,007 years to write, give or take 1,000.
I can only laugh because God downloaded the Bible study that I just released last week into me in one setting, and it took me 3.5 years to write it.
Yeah. Oh, then you're on the same about. Yes. Good. We're keeping the same writing schedule. That's nice. It was 12 years, and it was just a lot of me dragging my feet and battling what I had no business battling. So it finally all happened, and I'm super proud of it. And I just, I hope it's a blessing to a lot of people. I'm glad to be on this side of it though.
Yes. And tell the listeners the name of that book, unless in case they're not familiar with it.
It's called Missionary Mom. And it's just the idea that we are the first missionaries our kids come across, you know, that we get to be the Jesus that they meet first. And, you know, we really get to set the tone and the pace of what their relationship could be. We get to be the catalyst for them.
I love that. That is so important. You know, if more moms understood that high calling that we have, motherhood is not just a chore or an obligation, but it's a privilege and a responsibility, and that we are shaping the hearts and souls and lives of the next generation. And what an honor that is. So that's super cool.
Thank you.
I'm all about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So today we decided to talk about, on this podcast, we talk about struggles that people face. And one of the things in our pre-conversation that we talked about was teaching, and you've been teaching for a while. And so what have you seen that's a struggle, in that area of teaching?
You know, it's interesting because I've been a pastor for a long time. I'm an associate pastor at our church. And, but even before that, I mean, I really functioned as a pastor in the community. And so I have a lot of people that know me in ministry. You know, I speak publicly. And so there's a lot of people that will see me and they know me, but I don't know them. You know, their kids go to the school that I work at, or, you know, they will realize that I'm a teacher and a Christian for, you know, however God brings that around. A lot of it's community, but God will drop that, you know, in there, kind of like draw them to me. And I love that. I really love that. And so because I choose to work in public school, I feel like for me, my mission, I have worked in private Christian school before, and I felt like God was really calling me as a Christian educator to go into, I needed to go be salt. I needed to go be light. And there's definitely just as much work to do as an educator inside of a private Christian school. However, the people that seem more drawn to me are people who would never approach a private Christian school. So I worked in a lot of title schools and low-income areas. I grew up in all of that. And so it's very familiar. It's very comfortable for me. So it's been really overwhelming to kind of on the positive side to watch how God, I don't have to stand and say, I am a Christian, I am a teacher. He brings people to my room. And I literally had this mom walk into my classroom. I was a long-term sub it was like 3 weeks or something. I was working in this first grade classroom at a public school here. And she came in, and I don't know, I don't remember what she was going through, but she walked in and said, "Hey, I hear you pray." Like, she closed the door behind her. Uh-huh. Like it was some kind of clandestine meeting. And, you know, a little bit it was, because actually the school is run by all Muslim. It's an all Muslim leadership there. And they're very devout, and they schedule everything around their prayer times. So they would kick all of the kids out. So everyone would go outside for recess, and the teachers would lock their doors, and they would pray. And I don't really know too much about Islam, but I know this about 5 times a day. And that, so about 3 of those were inside of our school hours. And so, I mean, it was a big deal that I would be the non-Muslim person there. Wow. And that these Christians were just coming into my classroom. So on a positive way, it's so overwhelming that God allows us to be a part of a story like that, that he allows it to be part of work like that, that he brings people literally. I don't know how she knew I was Christian. I don't know how she knew I prayed. I don't know who told her. And, you know, that was about 15 years ago. And, I actually still know her now. She and I are going to go to yoga later. I mean, it's, you know, we became friends, and it was just, she was needing prayer. She was, you know, newer to being a mom, and her girls had just started school, and she just was needing a support system and really new to the area. So that's how God used me in that. And then on the flip side of it, you know, it's difficult. I meet with parents, because of the work I do in advocacy, and I work primarily with 5th grade. So I work with kids who are about 10 to 12 years old. And in Nevada, the average entry for trafficking is 12 years old, unfortunately.
Oh my goodness. That's horrific.
It is horrific. And so my job as a prevention specialist is to get to those kids before someone else with the bigger mouth gets to them and is telling them things that are inaccurate, you know, so to teach them to speak up for themselves and how to be an advocate for other people once they've found their voice. And I really, just because of my ministry and because I do a lot of urban ministry, that's just a natural byproduct of how I teach. So it's difficult though, when I've got parents coming in and it's a constant battle, and I'm trying to get them to understand that what their kids are needing right at a time where, as parents, for some reason, we have this idea that when our kids become double digits, we can be a little bit more hands off, and we definitely can. But not totally hands off. It's hands off with maybe like not a hover, because that's creepy, but you know, but just having your hands at the ready to step back in.
Yeah, that's good. My mother-in-law used to always say, when the boys are, because I have all boys, and she was like, when your boys are little, they have little problems. When they're big, they have big problems. Yeah. Because I hated the fact that I had to work when they were very young, and because I really wanted to be home with them. And she said, "Misty, you want to be home with them." She goes, "It doesn't matter now when they're a baby that you're not. It matters to you because you're sad." Right. She said, "But when they need you is when they're in middle school and junior high.
Right.
That's where the rubber meets the road." And she was right.
yeah. So that's one of the things I'm so excited about. So we've got 2 high schoolers that are actually launching this in a few weeks. And then my oldest is grown and her own woman now, so I don't have to worry about her. Whatever she does, she has to carry that. I just get to be excited when she makes great choices and then say, well, what can you do when she makes bad ones? So luckily she's a pretty good kid. But so our 17 and 18 year old launched this year. And then we've got a daughter coming into high school. And then my youngest he'll be in 8th grade. And so, you know, part of this job coming home is actually freeing up my schedule so that I can be around for those things. Because right now I'm not home till, you know, 5 o'clock or so. And when they've been home since 2 or 2:30, and what in the world are they doing during that time? And it's not that they can't handle it. It's just that, I mean, scientifically, they don't even have the whole front part of their brain, right? I mean, it's not,
right.
It's actually not even developed yet. And we're asking them to have understanding, reasoning. We're asking all of these things in of them in these huge doses, rather than, okay, here, try this. Let's see how you did. Okay, let's talk about it. How did you do with this little bit of responsibility? Okay, so I think you can have a little bit more, but just so you know, I'm still watching. I'm still here. I'm still going to speak up. I'm still your mother. All the way until you're 50 years old, I'm going to be saying things like, is that the choice you want to make right now? Is that a great idea? And here's what I see. And have you considered maybe this? And how we approach them is different. I mean, I'm not going to stand my 12-year-old in the corner. I mean, I guess maybe on maybe I would throw that out there if he's throwing a tantrum or acting like he's four. But I mean, it's different. You know, it's more of, hey, come, you need to come and have a conversation with me right now. I see that this, what I set you up for here was a little bit too much. You're not quite ready. So let's take a step back and see what you are ready for. And it's just different how we approach it. And so when I meet with these parents, what I want is I want to download all of this information that I've gotten from my experiences in education. And it feels impossible sometimes to get the ones who really need to believe me to believe me.
Yeah.
So for instance, we have a little girl at our school, and she is just going through the paces. And in my experience, my flags are telling me, and I've had over 20 years experience as an educator. And so I've worked with all ages, preschool through college age. So I've spent time in every single grade. And really with a lot of the really toughest cases are usually the ones that I get in my classes. And so I just have seen a lot. There's not a lot that surprises me. And so what I'm trying to explain to them is she's having some difficulty and we need to get to the bottom of it. And it's all of it is emotional. I mean, she's just as bright. It's just so incredibly bright. And so we start talking and I'm talking with her and just kind of getting to know her a little bit and trying to build some quick relationship with her so that we can get right. I want her to tell me what in the world's going on because my gut tells me it's something. And then I find out that, so the FBI has a top 10 list of the worst apps that you can be on, that your kids can be on. And so she's on four of the top 10. And so I'm talking to her about it and conversations that she has. And I can tell she's giving me a lot of pushback and not wanting to be forthcoming. And so I'm trying to explain to her parents, I'm like, look, you've got a 10-year-old here she's acting out in a lot of emotional ways right now. And here's my experience. And here's where I think you guys should, you know, I'm not telling you how to parent. I mean, I want to, but I'm not going to tell you how to parent. But how often do you guys check her phone? Oh, no, that's her business. Okay, well, if it's going to be her business at 10 years old, then that you're saying you're comfortable with everything that happens on there. Well, no. I'm like, okay, then it's going to have to be someone else's business other than hers because you're asking me to get involved. What can we do? We're really freaked out. Well, here's what you can do. Here's your daughter needs you right now. She needs for you to say, I love you too much to allow you to keep going down this road. No, you can't sleep with your phone at night. No, you can't have these apps. No, you don't need Snapchat as a 10-year-old. And, you know, I mean, just some accountability.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's so many weird things right now happening in the shade. I mean, that's nothing new.
Well, it's
right?
Just, it's the enemy is rampant because he knows his time is short. Right. And with everyone having access to the entire world,
right,
at their hands, like it's really even hard for our minds to comprehend because it's not the way we grew up.
Oh, right.
And so we have a whole new age. Mm-hmm. And the enemy is using that as a portal to get.
Well, it's like this tiny, and it's such a simple thing too. I mean, so if you think about even in this specific situation, what is he using? He's using our typical teenager, you know, I mean, just our idea of, I remember thinking the same thing these kids think when I was a teenager. Nobody gets me. I'm angsty. You know, I mean, I'm not receiving everything that I need here. And so I'm going to go find it down the path of least resistance. And luckily I was surrounded by a whole ton of people in youth group and church. I had sports, you know, coaches that were holding me accountable saying, what are you doing right now? Just get back to you're headed for a game right now. You can't be off doing whatever it is that you think you're about to go do. And you know, boys aren't important right now. And we have to win this volleyball game. And, you know, I mean, just getting our head back in the game. And right now, I think there's such a, we've sort of swung the pendulum to the other direction where we maybe had it, well, me growing up, we were definitely poor growing up. And so there is this temptation for me to not spoil my kids, but not make them have to go without. But then I'm doing them a super disservice if I'm not asking them to earn anything. If I'm just like, I hated how I, you know, didn't have this, and I hated how I didn't have this, so here, have all of it. But what are they getting from that? I mean, what have I even taught them? And so it's really, that's my parenting that's keeping them from being able to hold a job, or, you know, there's no value in working hard for something if I just keep handing it over. Yeah. So I'm really encouraged when I see, you know, more and more parents have started stepping up. There's a lot more awareness being raised about just internet safety. I got to work with the FBI a few months ago. I got to go through an academy with them where it was it's a citizens academy is what it's called. And it's just a lowdown on,
my husband went through one here in Houston. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it just was so eye opening. It was really fantastic. And then I've gotten to write some articles, talking with some of the agents and tie our work together. And so, you know, we work hand in hand with them, with the anti-trafficking agency. And so it's been really great, but the stories, the more time I spend with them, I feel like there's a sense of urgency that I just want all these parents to understand it's not hopeless, which is, I think, a lot of times the message that's conveyed with, you know, all of the phones, all of the internet, but it isn't too big of a thing to handle in your own home. It isn't, you know, it isn't impossible for kids to get through life without a phone or with a flip phone. And it's still very possible for us to stay connected with our children and students as an educator. It's still very possible for me to have a say in who my kids are becoming, even in the face of technology and all these other voices coming in around them.
Absolutely. I agree completely. You know, we give our kids a little bit of rope, and, you know, if they hang themselves, you know, I mean, or we tighten the rope when necessary, and, yeah. And, you know, we put internet controls and things on. And so, like, our teenage son, his phone completely shuts off. So basically it's an AirPod for him after a certain time at night, just because that way he can still have his phone in his room and he has no connectivity at all. We do random phone checks even at 7 years old. And my husband knows all of the apps, probably the ones that you talked about. Yeah. He is always like, they're not allowed to have this, because he does technology. That's his thing for a living. And so he's very much watchful, and which I'm so grateful for, because it's a tricky thing to navigate. But let's go back to the sex trafficking thing just a minute. And what are some of the warning signs that you see in these young girls that cause you concern?
So it's interesting, because I think a lot of times people in our minds, because of how Hollywood has played it, there's a real, you know, there's a real stereotype to who would be trafficked, or even so in Nevada. I mean, we've got strip clubs in the middle of our town. There's like one up the block from my house, and, you know, it's Nevada. And so, so there's legal and illegal sex workers here in Nevada, but really everywhere it's, you know, it's a kind of thing where we think we know who would get into that, and it's going to be someone who's poor or, you know, someone who's got a bad home life. But actually what we found, and even the FBI backed us up in our findings, they said that money has nothing to do with it. It really has so much to do with the child's perception. And so that's really the conversation that I listen for when I have lunch with my students, or, you know, I'll kind of pull them in a couple at a time and we hang out in the classroom. They'll help me with stuff around, and it's just building that relationship. And I just listen to their conversation. And, you know, because you can have a pretty solid home, and this could still happen to a child if his or her perception is that the parents don't pay attention to me. And so our actual wealthiest school, we have the highest caseload of girls who are being trafficked right now through our wealthiest school. And it's not because they need the money. That most of these girls don't see hardly any of the money that comes from it. It's actually because their parents tend to work a lot more. Mm-hmm. Or they're disengaged. You know, they feel there's this false sense of security that, oh, my kid would never do that. First of all, look how much I give them. And the kid on the flip side is saying, you know, hey, you know what I would really like instead of another phone is some time with you. How about instead of taking a great big vacation and we all go our separate ways. How about we go camping, or just smaller things that right. tend to be overlooked in different demographics. And you know, some of their, like we have students, we have kids who are really wealthy, and they choose to be homeless on the weekends because they're, a lot of times these kids will say their mom's an alcoholic, or, you know, she's addicted to over the counter meds, and dad's a workaholic. And so, you know, or she's gone all the time, or she travels all the time. And so the kid's left alone a lot. Well, we all want to fit someplace. I mean, it really comes down to that gang mentality.
Right.
I mean, though nobody in their right mind wakes up and thinks, well, I think I'm going to do a drive-by. What happens is they think, I'm sick and tired of being alone. And so it comes to the point where they're so willing to do anything to be in a group, to fit someplace. And so it's the same idea with these girls. They're so willing to do anything to fit in with somebody. And they really think they genuinely are getting into a relationship. And so some of the things are, if a girl talks about being, it's typically girls, it happens to boys too, but it's about 99% of the time it's girls. So I'll just use female pronouns.
Yeah, absolutely.
So she, if I hear her talking about dating an older guy, even if he's maybe 5-6 years older, 3-4 years older, you know, I mean, the kids that I work with are usually about, you know, 11-12 years old. So if you're dating someone who's 16, what's he
right.
doing?
Right.
You know what I mean, that's what's going on there. And then, you know, kids that are left alone a lot, which none of these by themselves are, you know, exact indicators, but when you start putting them together, kids who are, who tend to have a past of cutting, it's usually them trying to communicate something, a probable abuse or a possible abuse or traumatic event that they've not processed. And they don't even know how to go about saying, hey, I need to process this. So I've had a few kids walk up to me, kids I don't even know, but they've just known of me enough that they come up, they just show me their arm, or they just went into the bathroom and they, you know, they dice up their arm quite a bit. And they're not trying to commit suicide. They're trying to communicate. And so kids like that, they're already vulnerable. Kids where I know that they come from a home where the parents are gone a lot and not close. Because you can have parents who have to work a lot. You can have a single mom that has to work a lot, but her kids right. admire her. She's pouring in every second that she can, and she's making sure other people are pouring into her kids. And so just because you're a single mom doesn't mean your kid is at risk either of being trafficked or abused online. And so, I mean, there's some really amazing single dads, single moms, grandparents raising kids that are way invested. And then I look for, if they're talking about different apps that I know of that have been dangerous for some kids, if they're talking about, sometimes they talk about activities that they've done, over the weekend that they seem atypical for what their family would normally go do or what they could afford. If right. they start showing up with things like brand new iPhones, or, you know, nails, clothes. A lot of times that's how a trafficker will kind of draw a girl in. He'll spoil her for a while, for a month or two. And he spends right. that time making her believe that they're in a relationship, getting to know her and spoiling her before he asks her for a favor. And that favor is usually where it rolls into something, you know, where there's no going back, because then all of a sudden now there's shame attached to it.
Right. Well, and I met Rebecca Bender at She Speaks. I don't know if you know her, but her story is that she was in high school, an athletic track star, met this guy who paid a lot of attention to her. She might have even been in college, like she was maybe at the cusp. And they started dating, mm-hmm. you know, he was doting on her. She came from a good family, money, the whole thing. And then he invited her away for the weekend
yeah.
and, she ended up, not able to escape. And finally she has, and she's shared her story, but that's probably somebody that you should connect with. And
yeah, I'll look her up for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's exactly like you said, which is what, I think that's why it's so frustrating, you know, I mean, this whole realm feels so almost impossible to touch. And so, you know, constantly seeking God's word and remembering that he's all about hope, right? He doesn't want us to feel that way. it's so important if you work in any of this, or, you know, if you're an advocate in any way, even if you just live in a neighborhood where there are kids. And so now you're aware of this going on and you've got your eyes open. But one of the things that I think we overlook is how basic it is. And the way to combat that, this is how we're going after it anyway. There might be some ways that are better, but one of the things that I'm constantly saying to my students is you have to be the one that starts your own echo. Okay. So you are the one who's going to know your story. You have to know it well enough. Even at the age of 10, you have to know your story. And, you know, in church we'll call it a testimony, but everywhere else we'll call it your story. And you have to say, this is who I am. Because if you don't know that, what happens is that some older, you know, guy who's going to dote on you and is going to take his sweet time because, you know, he's going to make, I mean, if this is a multi-billion dollar industry,
right?
I mean, every year, billions of people are spent. I mean, billions of money is being spent on these women. And so we know that it's a moneymaker. We know that they are making tons of money on these girls, these younger girls, especially. And so if you know your story, then, and if you're confident in who you are, if you have had these conversations with your teacher, if you've had these conversations with your aunts, your parents, your youth leader, your, you know, your friends, whoever, your older siblings, and some crazy guy comes up and says, you know, hey, I'm going to, however he says it, I'm going to pay you all of this attention. I'm going to buy you all of these things. If you're aware that that's already a possibility in society, or that that's happened with other people, if you know these stories, you can look at it and say no, because eventually his conversation goes from, hey, you're so beautiful, you're so fantastic, to you're not really that great. And then it's a manipulation. You know, I mean, it's a constant, right? No one else is going to love you. Well, that's not true at all. I mean, I personally have an overdeveloped sense of security. And so mine goes the other direction. And so I'm like, well, you're wrong. I'll name all the people who love me. We'll be here a while. You know, but, you know, some kids don't have that. And so if we can start that conversation, if we can be the ones who start that conversation with them, so they're not having to figure it out on the fly. Some guy, we had a girl that was trafficked right out of Denny's. She was working at a restaurant, and she was a waitress, and the guy came in and they had picked her out. She was 16, and they said, we're going to flip her. And he started working on her, and he just came in and he became, you know, really close to her, understood, just kept saying, nobody understands you like I do. Nobody understands you like I do. You work so hard. You're so great at this. And then he found out that he wasn't actually her type. So he went and he got her type and brought him in. Hey, you were talking about your type the other night, and here's the guy. He plays guitar. He wants to travel, all the things that you said.
Right.
And he goes, so that guy spends time with her. They get in the car, they drive to San Francisco, and she's trafficked. That's the end of that. Yeah. You know, and so years go by before her story, you know, starts to clear, and she's able to escape all of that. But, you know, so now these years of damage to her, such a deep part of her,
yes,
that's already taken place. So, I mean, even if, I mean, you have kids that if they're raped once, that is rough. I mean, that can change the course of their life forever.
Absolutely.
So imagine these girls who that's happened, that's repeated. It's repeated sometimes in the same weekend. And so, I mean, that has to be a Jesus healing in there, right, to, you know, to move past that. I mean, like a deep, it can only be God, but
absolutely,
it isn't all discouraging, because I'm watching these women, like the girl, you're just telling me the story about this lady. I mean, I'm watching them stand up and say, this happened to me, and I don't want it to happen to any other person around me. I'm all done hiding. I'm not going to keep my story a secret. And I, you know, it's that what the enemy meant for terrible, for destruction, for death, God meant so much more. He's going to take this thing, and he's the ultimate writer, right? I mean, he's going to take this thing and change it to even better than we ever could have imagined could come out of that. And I love how he works.
Yeah. So, is what scriptures do you cling to as you go through this? Like, what are the passages that get you through so that you know that there's hope?
So Psalm 91 is probably the messiest in my every single Bible that I've owned in the last, I don't know, 10 years, maybe 8 years. And I've got a few different versions, and Psalm 91 is just, it's a kind, I feel like it's not sugarcoated. There's going to be arrows. There's going to be these things, but look what I have to offer you. I have my wings. All you have to do is rest in here. All you have to do is cling to me, and I will handle all of that. And so he's not saying that stuff's not going to come, because that's not real life, right? I mean, we've all lived long enough. And if you've been a Christian for longer than, I don't know, 4 days, you realize things are going to happen, right?
Well, and Jesus, that's the last thing he even warned the disciples before he left. He said, in this world, you will have, not you might have, not maybe, but you will have tribulation.
Yeah.
But take heart, because I've overcome the world.
Right. So,
yeah.
Right. We lose that. We lose that pretty easily, but I'd say Psalm 91 has been a go-to for me. There's times where I'm speaking out loud. I've walked through my house and read it out loud. I've stood in front of my kids' doors and read it out loud. You know, I mean, there's times we go to battle for our spouses. We go to battle for our neighborhoods, for our neighbors, for our church, for our pastors, for our children. And that, for me, that one is, it's kind of a warrior cry for me.
Absolutely.
That one is an encourager.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more with you. Well, this has been a wonderful conversation, and I've learned a lot, and I'm just praying that this message gets to those who need it. So let me just close with this one thing. If someone is concerned about someone being trafficked, what can they do? Where can they go?
If you have some information, if you have a gut feeling, you might need to get a little bit more. You can call me. They really, honestly, I'm online everywhere, and I get messages daily saying, do you think this could be a trafficking situation? And it's something that I can look into. And usually if I do think it is, I call the FBI. So I think a lot of people don't realize that the FBI has just a regular local number that you can call if you suspect anything. And from that, they take that tip, and they'll have a quick meeting about it. It's not quick. They actually have a protocol. They'll follow a protocol, and they meet and they decide, is this worth putting some agents on to look a little bit further into? And, you know, I would say a lot of times we're hesitant to call because we don't want to accuse someone of something, or we don't want to seem crazy. And I think, man, if my daughter's being trafficked, I would really love it if somebody risked looking crazy or getting up in my business just to call and make sure that she was safe. So
absolutely.
You know, I mean, that's kind of how I weigh that situation, but I don't have a problem getting in other people's business myself. So, I mean, I think it's helped a lot more than it has ever damaged anybody. And so, and they know that I care. They know that my, you know, my heart is right as I approach them and I'm saying, hey, what's going on here? Is everything okay? Is this on the up and up? But you can, it's just, I mean, you can look it up. You can Google the local FBI phone number and you call and you just say, hey, you know, I know, you know, you probably get a lot of phone calls a day, but here's this, what I'm seeing. And they're coming in and out of my neighborhood and they're dropping a girl off or they're dropping a guy off and then they leave. He's there for an hour and then he's gone again. That's suspicious to me that this keeps happening over and over. And what I'm seeing in this house, and it could be for anything. It could be for labor trafficking. It could be for, you know, drugs or any of that, but they really want to help. They really are asking to be a part of the community. And trafficking is 100% an FBI. That is a federal level crime. So, and if you know, for some reason it would be outside of what they do, they'll connect you instantly to whoever should be taking that call. But someone needs to be called. As teachers, I think it's really important to be seeking the training. And that's part of what my job is supposed to be. I'm developing some programs to come around and actually train different school districts on what to look for and what to do. So schools, just like they practice fire drills, they've got all of these, you know, code blue if someone's got anaphylactic shock or all these things, they need to have a protocol in place. So, you know, if there's administrators listening or counselors, school counselors, you just need to have something in place that you know what to do. So we had a little girl, 9 years old, and she said she came to school after being a tomboy for the entire time we'd known her. So she's fourth grade, 9 years old, and she was dressed like she was going out to a club. And the teacher was instantly like, "What in the world?" And she said, "Where are you? You know, where are your parents? Are they coming to pick you up?" Because that's usually how she got a ride. And she said, "No, it's Friday. That white van picks me up." And it, yeah, we were all like,
"Oh my god!" You know.
like record stop, what?
Right.
And actually it turned out she was totally lying. I mean, we really looked into everything. She was having some other issues and it ended up revealing a lot of stuff going on at home. She had heard that someplace and completely made it up. But that teacher was, she walked into my classroom in the middle of me teaching and said, I need your help right now. And so, I mean, it was just something we dealt with.
I mean, yeah. It's better to be proactive
right.
than not.
Right.
Because that story could have been totally different.
Right. Agreed. Right.
Yeah. Well, where can people find you?
I am at chantellebrewer.com. You can connect with me through there. There's a contact sheet on there. I'm on Facebook and I am on Instagram as both of those, Chantelle Brewer, S-H-O-N-T-E-L-L. It's phonetic.
Yeah. Mostly. And we will put that in the show notes as well.
Okay, great.
Well, thank you so much for coming on by His Grace. And thank you so much for the wisdom that you've shared. And I've really enjoyed our conversation today. And I know that this is going to be helpful to many. Yeah,
thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for joining me today on By His Grace. I hope you've enjoyed listening and are encouraged by our guest today. I would love for you to visit my blog, mistyphillip.com, for more encouragement. You can find me on social media as Misty Philip, and I would love to connect with you there.